Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello, and welcome to the 5 Yard Dynasty podcast with me, Rich Gooling. Another exciting show for you today. So joining me today is Rob from the 5 Yard Families. How are you doing, Rob?
Very, very well. Thank you for having me on. I feel honoured to follow all the guests you've had so far. It's been great to, you know, pick this topic as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be having a rehash, shall we say, of the 2020 draft. So we're going to be talking it through from a Superflex standpoint. But I guess before we dive into that, Rob, it seems silly not to at least discuss it. Obviously, we're recording on a Monday night to bring people behind the curtain. But did you stay up last night? Did you watch Super Bowl? What did you think of it?
I did stay up. And as a neutral and as someone who thinks of the game as something that's more than just offensive players, I really enjoyed it. Came into the game not knowing that the defenses were going to play a big part in it, and as we saw, they definitely did. You know, the Chiefs' defense couldn't deal with the Tampa Bay offense, and then they couldn't deal with some of the things that happened as well. It was a good experience for anyone who isn't all about the points. It's about what happens during the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of the talk today has been, I think if you're a Bucks fan and a Tom Brady fan, you absolutely loved it. And I think a few people were disappointed that the Chiefs didn't sort of come out and put up a load of points. But actually, as you said, it was an interesting game. The only disappointment for me was that I just felt that it sort of the fourth quarter just petered out. I would have quite liked a Chiefs touchdown just to make it close, to make it a bit more exciting. But as you said, from a kind of a schematic entertainment point of view, it was fascinating throughout.
And it wasn't through a lack of trying. They did try the hardest. It's just, you know, when you've got so many vital players, like the two starting tackles being out and, you know, just not being able to deal with the rush offense, you know, Mahomes had a tough time. I think we can all agree with that. And yet somehow getting away some incredible attempts and, you know, the one where he's virtually parallel to the floor whilst getting that pass away to Williams in the end zone. It's, you know, it's amazing what he can do. It was just a case of the Bucs defense being so dominant over that.
Yeah, I do think, and I've seen a lot of, Mahomes did everything that he could do. I do think maybe this is slightly controversial, but I think at times he was breaking the pocket a bit too early. I think there was times where he could have stepped up in the pocket, but he was almost, you know, to use a Jets phrase, he was seeing ghosts at times, and he was sort of getting the ball from the snap and almost taking off immediately, which if you're an offensive line, I get that, you know, they had loads of injuries, but you can block for a guy who's going to stand in the pocket. If he's breaking the pocket immediately, you know, if you're a tackle, you're essentially trying to keep the defender outside of you, but Mahomes was rushing outside immediately and he had no chance, kind of thing. So I did think that, you know, I think he caused some of those problems as much as kind of solved them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So diving into kind of the dynasty side of things. So how much kind of, are you in many dynasty leagues? Have you got kind of much exposure or?
Not as many as some of your previous guests. So let's just put it that way. I only signed up to two dynasty leagues this year. I've never done it before. This is my first year. And so this will be my first rookie draft in 2021. I have done redraft before, but this is only my third year, coming into my fourth year now of actually playing fantasy football. So it's been a very steep learning curve. I found out about Dynasty maybe 2 years in, but didn't have anyone to get involved with that as well. But yeah, this first season of Dynasty has been a lot of things to learn, and you know, that's why coming on these shows is going to be really good, because I get to learn from someone who's done it for a long time.
Well, hopefully we can teach you something, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, it's as you said, coming into your first rookie drafts, it's for me my favorite time of the year, because I think that, you know, we all have a draft, but particularly with the rookie drafts, I think there's so much opportunity to you know, essentially completely turn around your franchise or completely destroy your team if you go badly. So so as I alluded to earlier, so what we're going to do is we're going to do a redraft of the 2020 rookie draft. Obviously, so far this kind of podcast we've been mainly talking about last year. And I guess this is really the transition into rookie talk. So so we're going to redraft the 2020 rookie draft. And then from next week on, we're going to be focusing on kind of next year's draft class and beyond, getting you prepped for those rookie drafts. So so Rob, as you're the guest, I'm going to let you go first with the 101. So just to reiterate, this is a super flex PPR draft. We're drafting it as if it's kind of best player available. We're not worrying about team needs or anything like that. So who is your 101?
I went for the rookie of the year. I went for the offensive rookie of the year. I went for Justin Herbert as my 101.
It's hard not to, I think.
Yeah. Just the way that he came in this year after getting a lot of naysayers questioning his ability to do the things that he has shown himself to do this year. But to come in with such a short notice after what happened with Tyrod Taylor in week two, you know, instant impact, you know, and something that a lot of people will find very hard to do, even with the preparation of having a preseason, you know, an extended preseason and preseason games. But he was one of the bright spots in the Chargers offensive game. You know, he was calm and collected, stepped up. He developed great chemistry with some of the big names who were there already, but then also managed to get the most out of all the bit part players like, you know, Donald Parham, KJ Hill, Jalen Gatton, Tyron Johnson, you know, managed to get them firing as well. And, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who scores that receiving touchdown, it'll have been Herbert that's throwing them the ball. So, you know, he has made such a difference to imagine fantasy teams who've drafted him, you know, on the off chance that he comes in at some part of the 2020 season. But to get so much out of him for so much of the season must have been such an unexpected surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the value of where he was going in rookie draft. So his ADP from last year was the 110. So, you know, if you were a contender last year in 2019, you managed to get Justin Herbert with your first round pick. You've essentially, he's now, you know, a top six quarterback in terms of ADP. It's a fantastic guy to add that late in the draft. And I think it just reiterates the fact of how valuable quarterbacks can be when you hit on them in a rookie draft. And, you know, and it's a theme that I'll probably talk through over the next couple of months so I'm blue in the face. But I just think that in these rookie drafts, if in doubt, a quarterback is you know, a pretty good philosophy to have, to be honest. So I'll then dive in and take the 102. So following on that theme of if in doubt, take a quarterback, I'm going to take another quarterback. So I'm going to take Joe Burrow. I think that he came into what was, let's be honest, a challenging situation. I think that offensive line in Cincinnati was pretty awful. Yes, he had some fantastic weapons and he showed in the short time that he was on the field before that horrific injury that, you know, he could produce fantasy relevant wide receivers, but also could produce himself. So he was the quarterback 18 in points per game, averaging almost 18 points a game. I think that hopefully he comes back fully healthy from this horrific injury, and hopefully he can slightly get some improvements on the offensive line. I know there's a lot of people that are mocking some tackles, but I think I would like to see them go out and spend some money, whether it be a guard or a centre in free agency. I think perhaps that interior of the line is more of an issue than the tackles. What do you think about Joe Burrow?
I couldn't agree more. In fact, looking at the notes that I've made, you've pretty much covered everything that I wanted to say as well, which is great. I think he will come back stronger after this. We know he's a fighter. You know, he wants to win. He found all the defeats this year really hard to take. And, you know, he recognised he didn't play well enough in his junior year at college. And the turnaround that he brought in for his senior year, you know, that kind of learning from a setback is something that I think he's going to get in 2021 as well.
Yeah. And I think that as well, with these young quarterbacks, it's so important that you can keep it, you know, the same offensive philosophy around, the same offensive play caller, and the fact that the Bengals are, you know, very steadfast in that they give head coaches opportunity, they give them lots of time. And They've done that again with Zach Taylor when a few people were calling for his head. Hopefully that will allow, you know, Joe Burrow in the second year of that offense to really take a stride forward and be pushing to, you know, QB1 hopefully by the end of the year as such. So the 103, back to you. Where are you going here?
Now, I know you've had some people talk about this play already on previous podcasts. And I can see that you've actually highlighted the box next to it. I'm taking JT at 103.
It feels like this is fast becoming the 5-yard rush player to talk about. Nobody's allowed to come on the podcast without talking about him. So why Jonathan Taylor?
I know there was a big talk about the second half performance in 2020, and I absolutely agree, specifically with Nick saying it on the last two shows ago. His second half performance was such a turnaround. I actually had drafted him in both my dynasty leagues, and I was wondering if I was starting to regret it after the midway point of the season because of what was happening. He didn't look like he could see the gaps. He kept on running into tacklers when he was making the runs to the middle. And then every time any of the Indianapolis running backs made a mistake, they were getting pulled out and rotated in and out. And the second half of the season, that didn't seem to happen as much. It seemed to click more. Taylor said it himself that the game seemed to slow down around him, and that step up from college to NFL seemed to make a bit of a difference in the second half. And it also made a difference that, you know, the play calls varied from just ramming straight to the middle of the O-line. He actually got a chance to use the edges and not get stuffed as much. And that strong finish was really good. I think they also, he also covered Philip Rivers departing as well. And that could be a good thing for Taylor. Maybe that just gives a bit more variance about what's happening in the rush plays. A few more, you know, quarterback runs might take a little bit of the pressure off Taylor and allow those spaces to open up a bit more.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fascinating, isn't it? You know, the Colts are the kind of the contender without a quarterback at the moment, which seems slightly backwards in terms of you normally think that to be a contender, you've got to have a stud quarterback. But whoever does end up in Indianapolis, whether it be, you know, via trade or draft or free agency, you'd like to think that offense is still going to be a, you know, an above average offense. And I do tend to agree that I think it's going to run through Jonathan Taylor. You know, my point with Jonathan Taylor has always been that I love the player. I'm just a little bit scared of his current price in terms of dynasty circles. But yeah, to get him as the third player off the board in the rookie draft, it's hard not to love it. So this is where I've got a bit of a tier break to kind of open up. So I've got those three in sort of a tier of their own. And then I was kind of hoping that I wouldn't have to take the first wide receiver off the board because I kind of prefer the guy I've got ranked second over the guy I've got ranked first, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm going to stick to my board. So I'm going to go with Justin Jefferson as the 104. Yeah, what's not to love? You know, he was the wide receiver 6 as a rookie. He was posting 17.1 points per game. You know, he lined up all over the field. He proved that despite not having an elite quarterback in what is not considered an elite offense, he was still able to produce incredible fantasy numbers. I think that you're at least looking, you know, for him to be a wide receiver 1 or 2 over the next sort of 4 or 5 years, hopefully.
He certainly made the most of the opportunities that he's had. He's definitely grabbed Stephon Diggs' place in the team in terms of getting those long plays, those big plays from Kirk Cousins. It's going to be interesting to see if Kirk Cousins just stick around in the Vikings team, because I think that's going to change a lot of the reads that are made. Obviously, the lack of the off-season has made it quite difficult for a lot of rookie players to come in and make that connection with their quarterbacks, for example. And I was having a look at the red zone targets for Jefferson and Thielen. And Thielen has nearly twice as many red zone targets as Jefferson does. And I don't think it's a coincidence that 13 of Thielen's touchdowns have come from the red zone looks, whereas only 3 of Jefferson's touchdowns came from inside the 20. So, you know, if a different quarterback comes in there, that could be really good for getting those increased touchdowns for Jefferson next year.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Certainly something that I've sort of not looked at or thought about. But you do, when you think back to Justin Jefferson, you know, looking back at his highlights from last year, all of his touchdowns do tend to be sort of those longer variety. They certainly don't remember any sort of red zone looks that he was getting. But that is interesting that, you know, as much as he had an incredible season, could there potentially be some more upside there, as you said, if he's going to get some more red zone looks? And obviously, he did have a slow first couple of weeks to the season. You know, if he's now got a full off season under the belt, I do think that he's in that top tier of kind of dynasty wide receivers, and you've got to feel comfortable about him going forward. Mm. So back to you for the 105. So what are you going here?
Well, the debate about having JT or Clyde Edwards-Helaire in who was going to be the top one off the board. I've gone for CEH next. I had actually Justin Jefferson at 105. So he was my wide receiver one as well. But I want to put Clyde Edwards-Helaire a little bit higher up because, like I was saying before, the lack of off-season, a lot of teams have just gone with what they've known. And I think that's why the Chiefs brought in players like Le'Veon Bell and used Darrell Williams, because they had worked in NFL outfits before, and you can't really get the feel of a rookie player if you haven't got that extended preseason and the preseason games. So that's why I think this offseason is going to be super key, because they're going to get fully to grips with what Edwards-Helaire is capable of. There's no games to plan for, so they can try out new things. Whereas before, it's just like, right, we plan for this game. This is what we're going to do. Is Clyde going to be involved as much? Someone mentioned his red zone involvement on a previous pod as well, and hopefully that does improve as it did towards the end of the year. You get that little bit extra, and you never know. Clyde could be the pick that people expected him to be, but we'll have to see that. But that's why I've got him a little bit higher up than normal.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've not got him this high. I think there's a few players that I would have ahead of him, but I completely get it. You know, I talk with Stocks about, I believe in draft capital, and, you know, I think that he will come good as a dynasty asset. My concerns for him are the fact that I worry about that red zone usage. You know, we talked about the lack of goal line opportunities after week one last year. Mm. And I also worry that the book on him coming out of college was that he was an incredible pass catching weapon. But actually, if you look at the stats, he was a really good rushing running back between the 20s last year for the Chiefs, but he just wasn't utilized in the passing game anywhere near as much as, you know, he probably should have been. And I do wonder, you know, certainly I've been buying him up in this playoffs, because I think that his value is as low as it's probably ever going to be. And that might be a really good buy now to go and do, because obviously he didn't have a fantastic kind of Super Bowl. But I do think that next year, with a full off season, as you said, I think once he gets to have a whole training camp and the Chiefs can really see what he can do, I do hope that he gets integrated into that passing game more, and then that will only raise his ceiling down the line for me.
I mean, he didn't get that many opportunities in the Super Bowl, did he? But the yards per carry that he ended up picking up were, you know, better than any of the other rushers in the game. So if he can translate that, then that'd be great.
Absolutely. He had 9 rushing attempts, and I think he was sort of seven yards a carry. I mean, I was talking to my brother earlier, and I was saying that I think that the Chiefs kind of got away from what the Bucs were giving them, because I felt like the Chiefs were too worried about trying to score in one play because they were down. And actually, if they'd have come out in the second half and gone, right, the Bucs are sitting back in a too high shell, let's you know, crossing routes, run the ball, I do wonder if they could have methodically knocked down the kind of the deficit rather than trying to do it in one quick play.
Yeah.
And I do think that heading into next year, I'm certainly buying CEH based on his current value, because I think he could be a good option moving forward. Mm-hmm. So back to me for the 106. So I'm quite happy you went running back there, because that means I get to go and pick my guy. So that's going to be CD Lamb. I'll be honest, I absolutely love CeeDee Lamb. I think he's fantastic. So he was the wide receiver 22 so far in the season. But actually, through his first 5 weeks, in which he obviously was playing with Dak Prescott, he was the wide receiver 11 at that point in the season, which, you've got a guy that was a rookie, had a broken pre-season in terms of no true training camp, that kind of thing. And he was the wide receiver 11 through 5 weeks. I just think that his ceiling is top, you know, wide receiver one overall. I think he is the best talent at the wide receiver position in the class from last year. And I think that he's a fantastic landing spot in Dallas. I think that you've probably got another year of Amari Cooper being the kind of target leader, but I wouldn't be surprised if 2022 and beyond, you know, that becomes CeeDee Lamb's offense. I also think it's interesting. This is the last year in which Amari Cooper's contract is kind of unable to be moved, if that makes sense. So the Cowboys could easily walk away from Amari Cooper after the season. And then you've also got Michael Gallup, who's at the end of his rookie contract this year. So 2021 is going to be, you know, the three-headed monster passing attack, as well as obviously you've got Zeke and you know, potentially Dalton Schultz and Blake Jarwin potentially coming back. There's going to be a lot of mouths to feed. But I think from 2022 and beyond, I do honestly believe that CeeDee Lamb could be that overall wide receiver one in fantasy.
I think you could be right as well. Just looking at the stats that he had for those five games, averaging nearly 8 targets a game, which is a good figure for a rookie to come in. And I believe he had probably the best chemistry with an existing quarterback of any of the rookie receivers who came in. 10-plus yards reception, 2 games of 100-plus yards in just 5 weeks, and then 2 touchdowns against the Browns as well. He just didn't seem to have the chemistry with Andy Dalton, and Gallup was the one who actually got the better end of the Dalton deal coming in. So, yeah, let's hope Dak is back in 2021 because, yeah, CeeDee Lamb will feast off Prescott.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's probably a lot of people sitting at home listening to this thinking, how the hell can you take 2 wide receivers above, you know, this plethora of amazing rookie running back class? But for me, that's the reason why I'm going wide receiver here, because I think there's still 4, 5, 6 good running backs left on the board. You know, it is a truly incredible running back class. But for me, that positional value of, if I'm going to build around one player, one position in Dynasty, it is that stud young wide receiver, because the shelf life is 6, 7 years rather than the 2, 3 years that I can get at a running back. Mm-hmm. So back to you for the 107.
I am going with J.K. Dobbins for this one. And that is, again, looking at the second half of the season where the Ravens were breaking all kinds of records. But another reason I've gone for him is because of Mark Ingram's release. And that just frees up more possibilities for the 3 remaining rushing personnel, shall we say, because, you know, Jackson is a rushing backer in all names but one. And then also I feel that Jackson was starting to get a bit caught out with his scrambling as well. Like, the defences were starting to cotton on to the fact that he was the one that was running the ball, and they had to incorporate the running backs more, which was great news for Dobbins, great news for Edwards as well. You know, the form that Dobbins had in his last 6 games with 7 touchdowns, they were realising that he was a guy that they needed to use more to get that success. And I believe he's going to get that kind of usage next season as well. I like Edwards. I think Gus Edwards was one of the most efficient running backs in the NFL, looking at some of the stats that I made from my Find the Gap series. But I think, yeah, there's still enough there for Dobbins to do really well with this offense.
Yeah. Do you think, talking about Gus Edwards there, obviously he's a restricted free agent, do you think that he'll be back with the Ravens, or do you think that they'll sort of let him go and truly hand the keys over to Dobbins?
I think they should keep him, just because of what he can bring to a team in being such an effective foil for Dobbins. I think Dobbins will take a bit more of a role than Edwards will, but Edwards shown he can still do it. And, you know, losing Ingram has been a vital part of that offense for a couple of years. You know, they need someone else, so they can't just rely on one player to get tired out. I don't think Dobbins is quite there yet. So, yeah, keep Edwards at least for the time being.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's hard not to love Dobbins. You know, his efficiency stats from kind of in a reduced role are absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of sort of yards after contact and those sort of things, it was absolutely fantastic. It's just a question of, I guess, is he going to get that true kind of 200 plus, 250 plus carry workload? Is he going to get the passing game usage? That's my only slight concern with Dobbins. I think the guy I'm going to take here at the 108 is going to be DeAndre Swift. And personally, I've got them back to back in kind of rankings. They're very much in the same tier for me. I just personally lean Swift over Dobbins for that fact that I know that Swift is going to get, you know, true workhorse load. We've obviously seen Dan Campbell talking about he doesn't want a scheme guy. He wants a guy that's going to get the best out of his players. And he's, you know, highlighted DeAndre Swift. He wants a guy that's going to line Swift up in the slot and utilise him out there. And I'm very excited by potentially what Swift's usage could be. I think this offence, you know, if they do roll with Jared Goff, if indeed they do draft a rookie and try and offload Goff after restructuring his contract potentially, I think this offence is going to be Swift and kind of Swift alone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, are you a little worried about, I don't know whether or not these reports were confirmed, but Swift wanted Peterson to come back. He wanted Adrian Peterson to come back for the 2021 season. Do you think that has an effect on his game?
I don't think so. I think, you know, that certainly the talk that I'd seen is that Peterson is likely to come back. And I think he's quite keen to. To be honest, I don't think there's going to be many franchises that are going to offer him a contract. So he probably needs to snatch their hand off. You know, I think we saw down the stretch last year that Peterson is still going to get touches, he's still going to get opportunities, but I don't think he's going to get a big enough kind of slice of the pie as such that it's going to eat into Swift's workload. And for me, the big reason I lean Swift over Dobbins and certainly CEH in terms of being my kind of running back two in this class is I think his pass game usage is the best amongst anyone in the draft. And I think that he gets moved around, you know, he gets a significant amount of snaps out wide. Dan Campbell's obviously talked about that. And I just think that raises that potential ceiling so much higher because, yes, even if, you know, someone like Adrian Peterson comes in and gets 5 to 8 carries a game and you're going to tell me DeAndre Swift's only going to get 15 carries a game. But if he is complementing that with an extra kind of 5 or 6 targets, then, you know, we're going to be seeing significant enough workload for him to be an absolute stud.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen in the wide receiver groups either, do we? Like, we could see players coming out and they might just need to use Swift that bit more as well. You know, there could be even more for him.
Exactly that. I think this offense is going to be Hockenson and Swift. You know, they've got nobody else. I think Kenny Golladay's gone. I think Marvin Jones is gone. I think Marvin Hall's gone as well. It's going to be whoever they draft or sign in free agency and those two. And I think that this, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if we're seeing TJ Hockenson again 110, 120 targets maybe next year, which seems ridiculous and is a you know, a huge number. But if he's going to be the true number one, and I think that DeAndre Swift could easily see a sort of 50 to 60 target season in, you know, within his range of outcomes, certainly. Mm. So where are you leaning now? Where are we at? We're at 109 now.
The 109. I'm going for James Robinson.
Okay.
And again, there's the Jacksonville Jaguars have got a lot of first round picks coming in. They've, you know, got a lot of players who've come out, and there's obviously the talk about getting Trevor Lawrence in. We saw big things from Robinson. You know, he came in, did the business. You know, losing a lot of, I think Raquel Armstead is probably still out with COVID, actually, thinking about it.
Last I saw, he was still in hospital. So, yeah.
So we've got James Robinson coming in as a big lead back there. And I think one thing that held them back this year, if he got the numbers that he did, was that the Jags had to pass the way back into the game a lot because they just couldn't get things going on the defence or on the offence as well. He had a floor of 11 carries this season, and that still got 2 touchdowns against the Dolphins with that. But I think if they do take Trevor Lawrence, which is looking more and more likely now, then it's not going to help him get those early carries because they're going to mix the offense up a bit. But I think it does help him get those carries at the ends of games where they look to seal it out and they grind it out. And I still think he gets a really good floor and, you know, potentially boosts his game as well because the pressure's taken off him a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it seems ridiculous, isn't it? This is a guy that was the running back 7 in points on the season, and we're taking him at the 109 of a rookie draft. It does seem slightly ridiculous. I guess, you know, I've said a couple of times now that I do believe that he's going to be the lead back again in Jacksonville. I think they'd be silly to go out and, you know, spend whether it be draft capital or free agency money trying to bring a workhorse in when you've already got a workhorse there that's proved it. I think I'd have been a little bit more confident if the head coach and regime had stayed in place. But I think that you've got at least another one, potentially 2 years of him being a plug and play late back end RB1, early RB2. Mm-hmm. And at this point in the draft, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the concern I have is that, so last year he led the league, I believe, in opportunity share. So he had 81.5% opportunity share. So that's running back rushes and targets, which is an absolutely obscene volume in terms of work usage, especially for, you know, unprecedented for an undrafted free agent to to get that sort of workload. But that's my only concern, is that we are going to see a reduction. He's not going to be able to sustain that next year. I think they're going to bring in a complementary back. But I do also think he's going to see, you know, more touchdown potential if there's, you know, an upgrade at quarterback, an upgrade in the overall offense. Mm. So that does kind of raise that potential ceiling a little bit if we're looking at potentially more touchdowns, potentially fewer people in the box. If you've got a generational quarterback, hopefully we're going to be able to air the ball out a little bit more and free up some space for James Robinson.
Yeah.
So back to me for the 110. So sticking with the run of running back, shall we say. So I've got two in a tier here. So it's kind of neck and neck, ranked back to back. But I am going to go with Antonio Gibson. It's similar to kind of as we've talked with DeAndre Swift, as we talked with James Robinson. I think that there's probably going to be an upgrade at quarterback. I think that there's going to be hopefully an improved offense all around. Antonio Gibson, he was the RB13 last year, averaged 14.5 points per game. He was a true stud down the stretch, and I think that they're still not using him as he could potentially be used. You know, we saw him in college as a wide receiver that sometimes played running back, that was moved all over the place as a true gadget player. And then we saw him this year, and he was basically plugged in, you know, behind quarterback and just used as a traditional running back. I think that if we can get perhaps some more time in the offseason, he's got a year in the offense. Hopefully, if he can be used more as a kind of a movable piece, a little bit like JD McKissick was at times last year, I think that, again, you know, I keep saying the same thing over and over again, but it raises that ceiling for him. And I think that he could easily end up as a kind of an RB1 as early as next year, potentially.
Yeah, I think he could be right as well. And there's also rumours about Ron taking Curtis Samuel from the Panthers when he becomes a free agent as well. And just thinking, having those three players to be able to just interchange between wide receiver and running back and sitting in the slot, and, you know, just the potential there to just keep defenses on the toes and make some big plays is something that I think makes Washington quite a bit of a threat next year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is it was an awful division that they made the playoffs because they won. You know, they were the best bad team, shall we say. Mm. But this is still a playoff team with a combination of Alex Smith, Dwayne Haskins, Kyle Allen and Tyler Heinicke at quarterback. You know, if you're going to put in a competent quarterback that can run that offense, this could quite easily be a, you know, top half of the league offense. And I think as soon as you do that, you know, more touchdown opportunity, hopefully we're going to see him moved around more. This is the kind of player that I quite like having, because he's got that floor established. Mm. We know he's going to get workload. We know he's going to get those touches, but he's also got that really high ceiling of, you know, he could potentially fall out if we're going to see that increase in target, increase in usage. So
I'm excited to see him get a full season as well.
Yeah, exactly that. So back to you for the 111.
So I know that Cam Akers wasn't as involved as much as he could have been with the Rams because of Malcolm Brown and Darrell Henderson coming in as well. But just the impact that he made, like the difference that the Rams could produce when they worked with a ground-based offense, as opposed to using primarily the pass game, I think made it such a huge difference. I think he suffered because of our preseason as well, and that's why they went for players like Henderson and Brown to start off with. I'm excited to see what he can do, especially with a new quarterback as well. The Rams are very, shall we say, limited in how many players that they use in their receiving group. I think they only use 10 players to target in 2020, which is the smallest number in the NFL. And only two of those players saw 20 targets or less. Malcolm Brown saw 33 targets in 2020, and that was because Akers was unavailable. So you've got him coming through in like one of the lead rushing roles, but he's also got the opportunity to grab the targets in the pass catching game as well. I think he's going to be a really big threat for the Rams next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I hinted when I was picking Gibson that there was two running backs in a tier, and Akers was the second. I think you've only got to look at the way he was utilized in those two playoff games. You know, if you look at from a fantasy perspective, the two playoff games, he scored 25.6 points and 18.6 points. Well, those, you know, that's top five running back numbers there. I appreciate it's a small sample size, but it shows that when the game was on the line, you know, when the Rams had to win to make it through, Akers was in a true workhorse role. They utilized him in the run game, the pass game. You know, they were giving him the carries when it was important. Mm-hmm. Yes, I get that Darrell Henderson was slightly, you know, nicked up and injured, but I think that this Rams team is going to be win now. You know, they spent their first overall pick in the draft last year going out and getting a running back, despite the fact they had Darrell Henderson and Malcolm Brown already in house. To me, that shows that they really believe that what Cam Akers could be. And I think that he is going to, you know, be a fantastic back next year from a fantasy perspective. We've also seen, you know, new quarterback in terms of Matt Stafford. You can go back the last 10 years and Matt Stafford has always targeted his running backs heavily, you know, not at the Phil Rivers level, but you've only got to think back in the day, you know, Joik Bell, Jarvid Best, even DeAndre Swift this last year, you know, they've always been target monsters. And if Cam Akers gets, you know, if we're talking kind of a 60 to 70% rushing share, but is also going to get 50% of those potential running back targets, that's a, you know, fringe RB1, you know, RB2 player that you've just picked up at the end of a first round of a rookie draft, which seems, you know, it just shows you just how loaded this draft class was, that we're, you know, 11 picks in and you're picking a guy that has the potential to finish as an RB1, RB2 next year.
Yeah, and like DeAndre Swift got 57 targets from Stafford last year. If Akers is going to get a similar number, like you say, that ceiling just bumps up a little more. I'm quite surprised though, because we had Cam Akers at 107 and he's actually gone down four places. So it shows like the difference that other players have made this year to be able to justify getting bumped up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's had a decent year, obviously a fantastic playoff run, and we're drafting him four picks later than he was in rookie drafts. I think, you know, we've seen the wide receivers jump up perhaps in this. You know, maybe that's me. I'm a little bit more wide receiver happy than the norm. Obviously, CeeDee Lamb was going 109 and Justin Jefferson was 111 last year. So that's probably what's bumped them down a little bit. Mm. So with the final pick in the first round, so I'm going to stick with that wide receiver trend. So I'm going to take T. Higgins as the wide receiver three off the board. You know, this guy showed that in the short time he got with Joe Burrow before he went down, you know, he had a couple of weeks slow start, but from week three on to when Joe Burrow got injured, he was a wide receiver two. He averaged over 12 points a game, finished as the wide receiver 28 in his rookie season. For me, I just think that he's proven that he can be a reliable fantasy receiver in what is going to be an ascending offense. You know, you can basically cut and paste everything I said about Joe Burrow and insert it here and T. Higgins. I think he's going to be the number one in that offense in terms of target volumes. Yes, I think Tyler Boyd's still going to be, you know, a good, solid, reliable slot receiver, but I think T. Higgins is going to be that sort of 120 target guy that is hopefully going to be a fantasy stud for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, I love T. Higgins. I think you've just covered it just right there as well. Like the bump that Burrow gave him, I kind of put it onto a similar level of Dak with CD as well. Like they just got that connection, so, you know, that developed it in such a short space of time. And yeah, once he gets that protection behind the line, I think Joe Burrow is going to go to him early and often. And I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and I think for me, it works quite well because that's the first round done. But I think for me, there's sort of a tier break after those top 12 guys. I think there's a little bit of a drop down. That's not to say these next guys aren't fantastic picks and at all. There's still some really good guys on the board. But I just think that there's a little bit of a kind of a tear drop, should we say, moving on to this. So we're going to go through the second round now. We'll probably try and pick this up a little bit, probably not go into as much detail. But back to you with the 201. So where are you going here?
I'm going for Jerry Jeudy. There was two that I was flicking between, but I've gone for Jerry Jeudy on this one. And the reason I've gone for Jerry Jeudy is because of Cortland Sutton coming back. I think Cortland Sutton injury actually really hurt Jeudy this year because the coverage shifted over to him. They knew how threatening Jeudy could be. He got the coverage and it interfered with his play quite a bit, but that also led to other players doing really well. So like Tim Patrick doing really well, Noah Fant getting a lot of the volume as well. There's also a bit the question with the inconsistent quarterback as well. I think if they do stay with Drew Lock and he manages to get a streak of injury-free games, I think that and Sutton's return could do wonders for Jeudy.
Yeah, you know, I love Jerry Jeudy, the player. My concern, I guess, is that quarterback position, isn't it? I think I just worry if Drew Lock is going to be a good enough quarterback that he can sustain two, potentially three viable receiving options when you think you've got Noah Fant, Cortland Sutton and then potentially Jerry Jeudy. You know, as a second round pick, it's hard not to love it. I just worry that, you know, he saw an incredible volume this year. Mm-hmm. Yes, I get that, you know, he was seeing a lot of coverage his way. Yes, the quarterback play was questionable, but I don't think he's going to see that level of volume moving into next year. And he was only the wide receiver 45. I think at this point in the draft, absolutely. You know, it's a great pick, but I just worry that, I guess, there's a cap on his ceiling because of the offense as a whole. You know, we could be sitting here in a week's time and they've gone and traded for Deshaun Watson or something like that, in which case this is an incredible pick. But that's my concern, sort of, I guess, with Jeudy, is what's that quarterback position look like in 12 months' time?
Yeah, which is why I mentioned whether or not it could be consistent, because we haven't really seen a full, you know, injury-free season from Drew Lock and whether or not he can actually do it. I think players like, if Patrick does stick around, I think Hamler will be affected by it as well. I think Hamler's limited usage will drop off as well. So if there's going to be three to feed, I think Judy's probably going to feature as the third one. I'm just excited to see if he can actually show what he could do in college, like, because he's had notoriously sticky hands in college, but didn't really get to show that as much this year.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, you mentioning Hamler there, he's the kind of guy that I sort of really hate in fantasy, in that he's got a couple of good games in him, he's got a couple of long touchdowns in him, but I don't think he's ever going to see the volume. He's just annoying in that he will eat into Jerry Jeudy, he will eat into Cortland Sutton, but he's never going to produce reliable enough numbers that you feel comfortable starting him. Yeah, you know, I think Jerry Jeudy as the player is absolutely fantastic. It's more a concern around that situation. If you told me that, you know, in a year's time they're going to see a big upgrade at quarterback, whether that be through the draft or somebody new coming in, or as I said, if you said Deshaun Watson's going to be the quarterback in Denver this season, then yeah, I'd have probably taken Jerry Jeudy 5, 6, 7 picks earlier. And as I said, at this point, it's hard not to love it, basically, just because of that value. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go back to the quarterback position here. You know, when in doubt, take a quarterback. I think the fact that I'm going to get the QB3 off the board in, you know, the early second round of a Superflex mock is fantastic. I'm probably going to go slightly different to what people are expecting. In that I'm going to go with Jalen Hurts here, which leaves two on the board a little bit longer. I just think that when I'm taking a punt on a quarterback at this point, I'm looking purely for upside. Mm-hmm. And I think that Jalen Hurts, with his, you know, his potential to run the ball and potentially, you know, pass the ball as well, I think his upside is so much higher than somebody like Tua. Mm-hmm. We've seen, you know, he started four games. He averaged 23 points a game. That was more than Justin Herbert did through his season. So, you know, I'm not saying that Jalen Hurts is going to be a top five, six quarterback next year, but if we see that offense, you know, potentially take a step forward in terms of the receiving weapons, and he can still, you know, you have that running game usage combined with hopefully a step up in those receiving weapons and potentially be a, you know, dual threat quarterback that we're all looking for. And all kind of crying out for him in the fantasy world at the moment.
Yeah, I love his rushing potential, and I actually really like what he can do with Miles Sanders as well. I think the fact that both of them have got that rushing ability actually does take a little bit of pressure off Miles Sanders. My worry here is the offensive line and actually being able to give him the protection that he needs to make those passes. There were just times this season where the offensive line would work very minimally and then just watch Carson Wentz get sacked or watch Hurts get sacked, and there wasn't the protection there to make the passes that you would want for some of those wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm essentially basing this pick on Carson Wentz being gone. I think if Carson Wentz was still around, I'd probably look somewhere else with this pick.
Yeah.
But I think with all the rumours of him potentially going to Chicago, all the rumours of, you know, it's looking like this is going to be Jalen Hurts' team for the next 3-4 years. And I just think that with that potential rushing upside as a second-round pick, you know, I'm absolutely delighted here. So back to you with the 203. Where are you going?
It's all going to depend on what happens at Green Bay, whether or not this pick is going to turn out, because Aaron Jones could be leaving Green Bay. We don't know whether or not it's finalized yet, if he's going to another team or if he's going to get an extension, but I think his departure could be great news for AJ Dillon. The end of the season, after he'd gotten through his injuries and through the COVID protocols and coming back in, we saw some real glimpses of what he could have done throughout the season. And also Jamal Williams is up for free agency as well, so there is potential here for, you know, Dillon to take the role of two players, get all the rushing volume in there as well, and maybe Green Bay take a veteran to help, you know, give some competition in the position, or draft someone in the fourth round to give a bit more competition there. It's all dependent on whether or not any of the running backs who've been established this season are staying around, but I want Dillon at 206.
Yes, I think that, you know, you've only got to look at that week 16 performance, haven't you? You know, he dropped 26 points in a week. I think that, you know, that shows his kind of upside potentially. I do think that Green Bay will bring one of those running backs back. And I think they're going to almost use the fact that both of them are up as leverage to hopefully, you know, get a team-friendly deal. But I think that AJ Dillon is going to carve out a significant role for him. And as you said, if you can get, you know, a startable running back in the second round at this point, that's fantastic. Back to me. So at the 204, so I'm going to go with Brandon Ayuk here. I mean, yes, there's a lot of questions about can he produce with, you know, Deebo Samuel and George Kittle fully healthy. But from week 7 to week 15, which I appreciate I'm taking a, you know, an arbitrary random period of time, but during those weeks, he was actually wide receiver 3 in points per game. So he averaged 20.8 points per game, which is, you know, astounding. I just think that this is worth a risk at this point in the draft for a guy that could be, you know, a very useful wide receiver. Yes, if he come, you know, George Kittle, Deebo Samuel carve out their roles as the 1 and 2, is there going to be enough targets in a run first offense for him to be fantasy viable? But I guess I'm taking a punt on that potential upside.
Yeah, what's quite odd about Ayuk is that he kind of took Debo's role when Debo was out injured, but Ayuk had only ever rushed once in college. I think it was only for about 6 yards as well. So to see him fit quite naturally into making those end around runs, it was quite a pleasant surprise for people who drafted him quite late on. And you've got to remember that he was also getting the majority of his passes from Mullins and CJ as well after Jimmy G's injury. So if there's a bit of an upgrade there, it could be good news for not just Ayuk but the whole San Francisco receiving core.
Yeah, and it's another question mark at quarterback, isn't it? It seems to be a theme throughout this year. But who knows? You know, the 49ers can move on from Jimmy G. I think it's $2 million in their cap they'd have to eat if they cut him. So it could easily see, you know, one of these potential free agent quarterbacks or indeed one of these veterans via trade. You do wonder who could potentially be throwing the ball to him in San Francisco next year. So back to you with the 205. Where are you going here?
I'm going for Chase Claypool on this one. And I know you're a big DJ fan as well. So this could be quite a controversial one. But at this all really comes down to Big Ben saying that he might be coming back for another season, which is going to be good for the passing game. Not so good for the running game, unfortunately. So it's good news for DJ and for Claypool as well. I think if Ben does decide to retire, though, in between now and the start of the season, I think this could drop. And with Juju leaving as well, potentially to another club, I think this just gives those two a great opportunity to hit the numbers that we kind of expect them to see if there's only two big receivers.
Yeah, and I don't think my love for Deontay is not necessarily a hate for Claypool. I think it's just perhaps me as a fantasy player, it's the type of player that I don't particularly like rostering, if that makes sense, in that, you know, I talked about it earlier with someone like KJ Hamler. I think Claypool, you know, next year and he might prove to be more consistent, but I do worry that he's going to have a season like he did this year where he'll have 5 or 6 weeks where he is absolutely phenomenal, posts incredible numbers and will win you a week, but could quite easily disappear for a week or two and kind of, you know, essentially lose you the week. And that's just not the type of player that I like at my wide receiver positions. As a wide receiver, I'm looking for somebody like Deontay, who I know is going to get 10 targets a week and has that floor of 7-8 points as his worst case scenario, you know. But as you know, I seem to keep saying it is ridiculous. You know, this is the 17th player off the board and it's a guy that finished as the wide receiver 23 this year in his rookie year. You know, this is such an incredible class. It's hard not to love it, quite frankly. So back to me with the 206. So yeah, I'm going to finally halt the slide. I'm going to finally go back to the quarterback well and take Tua. I think it's perhaps says all it needs to, the fact that he has fallen all the way down to the you know the 206 in this draft. But for me, I just worry about that upside. I think I'm not sure Miami is fully committed to him being the quarterback for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years. I worry that if he does falter again, that could be the end of him as a, you know, a starter in the league. And I just think that he moved around, he rushed a lot in college, not as a kind of dual threat quarterback, but as a mobile quarterback that can move in the pocket. Has that been affected by the injury? We didn't see it a huge amount in Miami. I hope that he's going to come back, you know, have another year since that horrific hip injury and could be a really good kind of starter, right? But I just think that he's got that cap on that ceiling. You know, we saw the game, I can't think which one it was, but I think it was week 14 or week 15 where he had, you know, sort of 20 passes for about 80 yards and it was absolutely pathetic. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick came in and in, I think, one drive had more passing yards than Tua did in three quarters. And I just think that unless he's going to take a huge step forward this offseason, I worry about his ceiling. But, you know, as I said, at the 18th pick off the board, it's hard not to go and pick a guy that was going as the 104 in startups last year, but in some circles was the QB1, QB2.
And you hope that he can get that consistency and you know, be allowed to make some mistakes and then learn from it rather than just getting taken straight out for the backup quarterback. Because Fitzpatrick does seem to have a trend of being able to mentor quarterbacks and then just usurp the places as the starter. But I think they need to give Tua a bit more time. And, you know, Flores, he drafted Tua and he needs to just give him the season and let him get it through and stay unscathed and, you know, hopefully get some offensive weapons that aren't going to get injured and actually give him a shot at making some decent plays.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So where are we now? We're 207. So where are you going here?
It's getting a little bit difficult because I've got a few wide receivers lined up who all kind of feature very similarly in what they do. But
it feels like there's a big drop off after that pick, doesn't it? It feels like there's another kind of tier break. We talked about the tier break after 12, and there's definitely a tier break here for me.
And there's a lot of questions about whether or not they're going to be playing with the same quarterbacks as well. So I think I might have to go for Darnell Mooney on this one.
Oh, okay.
I really like Darnell Mooney. He had a really good season. He seemed to get the inconsistency of you know, having Mitch or having Foles passed to him. But I think Allen Robinson moving on, if he does decide to move on, could be a big thing for him. I think he could be the big player for Chicago. It's all going to depend on who's throwing to him, though.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was shocked that you took him there, but that wasn't shock at the pick. It was shock because I thought that I was higher on him than most. so it was shocked to be usurped as such. Yeah, I love Darnell Mooney. I think, you know, he is blazing fast, but he showed last year that he's got a kind of nuanced route tree. He can win in different levels of the field. Mm. And I think that he's always going to kind of be at his best as a 1B in an offense. I don't think he's ever going to be that true number one kind of X receiver. I think he needs somebody to kind of complement him and work off. But if we can, you know, again, there's all sorts of rumors about who could be the quarterback in Chicago at the moment. But if hopefully it's an upgrade on, you know, Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky, who were both, quite frankly, shocking last year. You know, he averaged almost 10 points a game in a complimentary role in a bad offense as a rookie. Hopefully he can take a step forward and, you know, at this point, love it. Absolutely love it. So back to me with the 208. So again, I'm going to stop another slide, shall we say. I'm going to take Jalen Reagor. Just, you know, this is a guy that was a first round pick 6 months ago. I do worry with rookie wide receivers that just don't produce. That's an absolute red flag for me. I think, you know, there's a guy that I imagine we'll come to in a couple of picks that didn't produce, but at least flashed in a couple of games. And I'm not sure that Jalen Reagor did, but, you know, I say it before, I'm a draft capital guy. And I just think that he's got the potential to still produce if hopefully we finally see some improved quarterback play. It certainly can't get any worse from what it was last year.
Yeah, I mean, I love Reagor. I wrote about him in my writer's battle for the wide receivers for the rookies. So I've learned a lot about him and, you know, really, really enjoyed what he did in college. It's just so unfortunate that his injury kind of coincided with a lot of other injuries in Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia targeted 20 players throughout last season, which was one of the highest in the league. I think it was the joint highest in the league. So there wasn't able to make any consistent plays. I think he could have been something that was very useful to Philadelphia if he'd just stayed fit.
Yeah, and I think that there is definitely a role for a fantasy relevant receiver in that offense. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw Travis Fulgham pop up in the middle of the year. You know, it looks like Alshon Jeffery's going to be out the door. I do wonder if DeSean Jackson could be following him. You know, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside has certainly not produced what people hoped. And I think that there's a role for somebody to produce kind of fantasy relevancy. We've seen over the last week or so some reports that Travis Fulgham lost the trust of the coaching staff for his work habits. And I think that, you know, at this point in the draft, I'm willing to take a punt on J. Jalen Reagor hopefully coming out and being the guy. So so back to you with the 209.
Ooh, I am going to go for, again, this is where the drop-off is coming quite strongly here, but I like Michael Pittman.
Oh, I thought you were going to take my guy. Okay, I'm
happy. That's good. like, he had a really strong season as well. He was a member, but he's a member of a very strong wide receiver group, and, you know, Philip Rivers liked to spread the ball about, you know, not just in wide receivers, but with the tight ends as well, you know, with the running backs. T.Y. Hilton and Zach Pascal, the two players who got better receiving stats, are also on free agency coming into this year as well. So there could be a battle between him and Paris Campbell for who makes the move into becoming, you know, the ex receiver. It's, I think maybe Pittman has the edge because Campbell's injury history, he hasn't had a whole lot of games, shall we say. So we're just going to have to see how this one goes. But I do like Michael Pittman and what he managed to make of his season.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I kind of foresee Campbell being used as he was early last year in that, from running out the slot, a lot of underneath, a lot of crossing routes. And I think that Pittman is probably going to be used, as you said, in that sort of X receiver outside, big body, move the chains kind of guy. Yeah, but, you know, I really like the guy. I really like the pick. It's again, you know, I seem to be saying this every time, but it's a big question mark about who that quarterback's going to be moving into next year. Now, for me, at the 210, I'm very pleased that you didn't take him.
It was between him and Pittman.
I'll be honest, this is my guy. You know, I'm a Jets fan. I've got high hopes, but it is going to be Denzel Mims. Showed some real potential in flashes last year.
Yeah.
Didn't kind of take that step forward down the stretch. If you've only got to look at, he had significant targets through a 4 or 5 week period from week 11 on. But actually his catchable target rate was one of the worst in the league. He was around this kind of 60% mark for his catchable targets. And I think it just shows that, you know, Sam Darnold was pretty awful as a quarterback last year. And I think that potentially, you know, again, a lot of rumours about who's going to be the Jets quarterback, but I think there could be a potential to see an upgrade there. I think you're going to see an upgrade in the overall offense with, you know, we've got a lot of money to be spending in free agency and some really good draft capital. So I am expecting, you know, an upgrade in terms of that move forward as an entire offense. But I'm also quite excited about the offensive coordinator. You've got the LaFleur brother coming over from the Colt Shanahan scheme. You know, if Denzel Mims is going to be utilized a la the kind of the wide receivers in San Francisco, or if you kind of go back and say he could be utilized as that kind of X receiver, something like a Julio Jones, I think he's got the big enough body that he's going to be utilized on those in-breaking routes. I am very excited about his potential next year. And as the, what are we now, 22nd player off the board, I think at that value, he's an absolute buy for me.
That sounds good.
So your final pick?
I'm going to go for Henry Ruggs at the 210.
Sorry, I didn't mean to be quite so silent there.
Yeah. I think the difficulty with signing to, you know, wide receivers like Ruggs and Edwards kind of backfired on the Raiders a little bit because the usage that the Raiders got out of their existing players, like, you know, Hunter Renfrow, they got Aguilar as well, they got Darren Waller, you know, massive tight end season for him. But then Ruggs ended up as the wide receiver 3 on the team with only about 40 odd targets, and I think they could potentially give him more once they give him the off season and he gets a chance to do what he showed in college. Like, there was such big expectations about Ruggs coming out of college and coming into the NFL, but just didn't really get a chance to show it as consistently as we expected.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's back to this thing about what I want from my wide receivers. And I was very low on Henry Ruggs coming out because I think that he's going to be a better NFL player than a fantasy receiver, in that I think he is very useful to offenses because of his pace, because of his the ability to stretch the field. You know, you can't line him up in a true one-on-one. You're always going to shade that safety over the top because he's got the pace to get behind. But I just don't think that he's ever going to be able to carve out a role to be kind of truly fantasy relevant. And it comes back to this thing of, you know, I said earlier, I really don't like wide receivers that don't produce in their rookie year, because, you know, history has shown that there's a couple of exceptions in terms of Kenny Golladay and Chris Godwin. But outside of that, in the last 5 years, if you don't produce in your rookie year as a top 50 wide receiver, you pretty much don't have the opportunity to produce moving forward. But, you know, as a flyer, why not? It's worth going and taking a punt on a guy that can score any time he touches the ball, isn't it?
Yeah, and when we look at the remaining options that we have left, it's
it's not great.
It's not great.
No, I agree. So the guy I'm going to take as the final player in this mock draft, so it's going to be Laviska Shenault. And this is, you know, we've said it, I think, 10 times now, and perhaps if anyone's playing a drinking game, they can keep drinking. But, you know, it's going to be a very different quarterback situation in Jacksonville. And I think that, you know, I talked about it a couple of weeks ago, DJ Chark is absolutely the kind of dynasty darling at the moment. Everybody's saying, go out and buy DJ Chark because he's going to see a massive upgrade in quarterback play. But there's no guarantee that Laviska Shenault's not going to be the wide receiver one there in terms of target volume. And I just think that, you know, at this point in the draft, you can go and take a punt on a guy that, you know, he produced over 11 points a game last year with awful quarterback play in a slightly backwards offense. If we're going to see a step forward, you know, Urban Meyer, yes, he is a very questionable human being, shall we say. But I think that he is an innovative offensive mind, and he brings that to Jacksonville. You've got a guy like Shenault that can line up all over the field, gets used out of the backfield, out the slot, out wide. You know, he could potentially be a usable fantasy option. Someone like a Deebo Samuel, the way he's used in San Francisco, I could see that as the potential for Shenault in Jacksonville.
You make a very good point there about where he was lining up and the roles he did, because I've got in my notes next to him, he did okay. But then thinking about it, he wasn't a mainstay in any position, was he? He did move around, and I think that's probably why he was a bit more under my radar for me. Like a new quarterback could very much turn that around, and I think you could be right with that one.
Yeah, I think, you know, at this point in the draft, I think with this draft class, it is truly incredible. But I think once you get out of, I can't remember where we said it, sort of the top maybe 18 guys, I'm just looking for upside. Mm. And I think that, you know, yes, there's a few wide receivers here that we've not mentioned, someone like Gabriel Davis or someone like that has that potential upside. But I wouldn't put any of those guys ahead of Laviska Shenault or Denzel Mims or even someone like Henry Ruggs, who, you know, has got decent draft capital on, is in hopefully an offense that is going to take a step forward. And, you know, why not take a punt? And if he doesn't turn into anything, you've not really wasted much in terms of cost.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, fantastic. So that concludes the mock draft. Before you go, though, Rob, I'm keen to, you know, everyone that comes on, I get your Dynasty Island picks. So this is one player that you'd want on your Dynasty Island. And then one player that you'd want to abandon on Dynasty Island and therefore not have to own ever again. So who are you going for?
So the player there's only really one player that I've got in both my Dynasty leagues. I've only got two, is Jonathan Taylor. But I think the player that I would have to pick, would have to be Travis Kelce. I've only got him in one league, but the difference that he makes in the leagues that I'm in, where tight ends do score very well, is, you know, it's just such a drop off from there. And you may get a player like Darren Waller who gets up to tight end two, or you get George Kittle who comes in and challenges as well. But you made a very good ADP stat previously this month, in that his value is just so consistent that you can just drop him in there, and there's just no questions that, you know, Kelce is going to perform.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was I think it was 74 consecutive months that he's been valued as a top five tight end in ADP, which is just, you know, that is incredible consistency. And let's be honest, we're all sitting here hoping that he's got at least two, maybe 3 years left as that sort of elite tight end. Yeah. I think I don't see any potential of him taking a step back, certainly next year and hopefully in 2022. Now the, you know, the exciting one, who are you abandoning on an island?
So I'm going to be dropping off a running back. And you know, we've seen such a dramatic turnover of running backs over the last few years. You know, Todd Gurley going from, you know, stud in the Rams to virtually being unneeded at the Falcons. You've got Kenyon Drake, you've got David Johnson. They've had the day now. They've had the day in the sun. But it's going to be James Conner is going to be the man that I leave behind. Just because of how effective he was with the ball this year, as in he wasn't very effective at all. I think he was probably one of the least, if not the least, effective running back, effective lead back, with how far he got with his runs. And again, this comes down to whether or not Big Ben is going to be there. And I think Big Ben got sacked amongst the least in the NFL. And just shows the amount of protection that line is willing to give the quarterback rather than the running backs. And, you know, it could be another season of a great pass game, but not a great run game. Bearing in mind, he's actually coming to the end of his running contract as well, his rookie contract. So it doesn't look really good for his prospects next year. So I just feel he's just going to be left floating in limbo. I actually sold him midway through the season in one of my dynasty leagues, and I haven't looked back.
Yeah, it's hard for me to not agree with everything you said. I think that offense, you know, Big Ben is such a pass-heavy offense, and he gets the ball out so quickly that short intermediate passing game almost replaces the run game. Mm-hmm. You know, my big thing is that I bang on, you need to sell running back twos. Those are the kind of guys that finish in that, you know, RB15 to RB20, 26, 28 range that basically finish there because they get 10 to 15 carries a game and are sort of plodders, but don't do anything with it. Those are the guys that I never want to own, quite frankly, because I think that, you know, I can replace a James Conner's production with a guy off the waiver wire as a kind of a bye week filling and such. So yeah, completely get that, Rob. That is, agree with you there 100%. So thank you ever so much for coming on, Rob. It's been absolutely fantastic. I've really enjoyed talking through the rookie draft with you and look forward to hopefully bullying you into getting in a few more dynasty leagues as we approach startup season. But before you go, where can everyone find you? Where can everybody find your work and follow you on Twitter?
So I'm only really assigned to 5-Yard Rush at the moment. So that's where all my work is. So it's on 5yardrush.co.uk. And I tweet those out from my handle at 5yardrob. You know, I had a previous name that was a bit too complicated for people. It was very difficult to spell. So I've just gone for 5yardrob as my Twitter handle.
Nice and easy, nice and simple. Yeah. But thank you very much. And we'll speak to you again soon.